and she feels as if it's happening to her. She can't tell the difference. Did this mean if I told May about T-Ray's mounds of grits, his dozens of small cruelties, about my killing my mother, that hearing it she would feel everything I did? I wanted to know what happened when two people felt it. Would it divide the hurt in two, make it lighter to bear, the way feeling someone's joy seemed to double it? Rosaline's voice drifted from the kitchen window, followed by May's laughter. May sounded so normal and happy right then, I couldn't imagine how she'd gotten the way she was. 1 minute laughing and the next overrun with everybody's misery. The last thing I wanted was to be like that. But I didn't want to be like T-Ray either, immune to everything but his own selfish life. I didn't know which was worse. Was she born like that? I asked. No, she was a happy child at first. Then what happened to her? August focused her eyes on the stone wall. May had a twin, our sister, April. The two of them were like one soul sharing two bodies. I never saw anything like it. If April got a toothache, May's gum would plump up red and swollen just like April's. Only one time did our father use a belt strap on April, and I swear to you, the welts rose on May's legs, too. Those two had no separation between them. The first day we were here, May told us that April died. And that's when it all started with May, she said, then looked at me like she was trying to decide whether to go on. It's not a pretty story. My story's not pretty either, I said, and she smiled. Well, when April and May were 11, they walked to the market with a nickel each to buy an ice cream. They'd seen the white children in there licking their cones and looking at cartoon books. The man who owned the market gave them the cones, but said they had to go outside to eat them. April was headstrong and told him she wanted to look at the cartoon books. She argued with the man for her own way, like she used to do with Father. And finally the man took her arm and pulled her to the door, and her ice cream dropped to the floor. She came home screaming that it wasn't fair. Our father was the only colored dentist in Richmond, and he'd seen more than his share of unfairness. He told April, "Nothing's fair in this world. You might as well get that straight right now." I was thinking how I myself had gotten that straight long before I was 11. I blew a puff of air across my face, bending my neck to behold the Big Dipper. June's music poured out, serenading us. I think most children might have let that roll on by, but it did something to April, August said. She got deflated about life, I suppose you'd say. It opened her eyes to things she might not have noticed, being so young. She started having stretches when she didn't want to go to school or do anything. By the time she was 13, she was having terrible depressions. And of course, the whole time, whatever she was feeling, May was feeling. And then, when April was 15, she took out our father's shotgun and killed herself. I hadn't expected that. I sucked in my breath, then felt my hand go up and cover my mouth. I know, said August. It's terrible to hear something like that. She paused a moment. When April died, something in May died too. She never was normal after that. It seemed like the world itself became May's twin sister. August's face was blending into the tree shadows. I slid up in my chair so I could still see her. Our mother said she was like Mary, with her heart on the outside of her chest. Mother was good about taking care of her, but when she died, it fell to me and June. We tried for years to get May some help. She saw doctors, but they didn't have any idea what to do with her except put her away. So June and I came up with this idea of a wailing wall. A what kind of wall? Wailing Wall, she said again, like they have in Jerusalem. The Jewish people go there to mourn. It's a way for them to deal with their suffering. See, they write their prayers on scraps of paper and tuck them in the wall. And that's what May does? August nodded. All those bits of paper you see out there stuck between the stones are things May has written down, all the heavy feelings she carries around. It seems like the only thing that helps her. I looked in the direction of the wall, invisible now in the darkness. Birmingham, September 15. Four little angels dead. Poor May, I said. Yes, said August. Poor May. And we sat in the sorrow for a while, until the mosquitoes collected around us and chased us indoors. In the honey house, Rosaline was on her cot with the lights out and the fan going full blast. I stripped down to my panties and sleeveless top, but it was still too hot to move. My chest hurt from feeling things. I wondered if T-Ray was pacing the floors feeling as injured as I hoped he did. Maybe he was telling himself what a rotten excuse for a father he was for not treating me better, but I doubted it. Thinking up ways to kill me was more like it. I turned my pillow over and over for the coolness, thinking about May and her wall and what the world had come to that a person needed something like that. It gave me the willies to think what might be stuffed in among those rocks. The wall brought to my mind the bleeding slabs of meat Rosaline used to cook, the gashes she made up and down them, stuffing them with pieces of wild, bitter garlic. The worst thing was lying there wanting my mother. That's how it had always been. My longing for her nearly always came late at night when my guard was down. I tossed on the sheets, wishing I could crawl into bed with her and smell her skin. I wondered, had she worn thin nylon gowns to bed? Did she bobby pin her hair? I could just see her, propped in bed. My mouth twisted as I pictured myself climbing in beside her and putting my head against her breast. I will put it right over her beating heart and listen. Mama, I would say. And she would look down at me and say, Baby, I'm right here. I could hear Rosaline trying to turn over on her cot. You awake? I said.
Who can sleep in this oven? She said.
I wanted to say, you can, as I'd seen her sleeping that day outside the Frogmore Stew General Store and Restaurant, and it had been at least this hot. She had a fresh Band-Aid on her forehead. Earlier, August had boiled her tweezers and fingernail scissors in a pot on the stove and used them to pluck out Rosaline's stitches. How's your head?
My head is just fine.
The words came out like stiff little jabs in the air. Are you mad or something?
Why would I be mad? Just 'cause you spend all your time with August now ain't no reason for me to care. You pick who you want to talk with. It's not my business.
I couldn't believe it. Rosaline sounded jealous. I don't spend all my time with her.
Pretty much, she said.
Well, what do you expect? I work in the honey house with her. I have to spend time with her.
What about tonight? You out there working on honey, sitting on the lawn?
We were just talking.
Yeah, I know, she said, and then she rolled toward the wall, turning her back into a great hump of silence.
Rosaline, don't act like that. August might know things about my mother. She raised up on her elbow and looked at me.
Lily, your mama's gone, she said softly, and she ain't coming back.
I sat straight up. How do you know she isn't alive right in this very town? T-Ray could have lied about her being dead, just like he lied about her leaving me.
Oh, Lily girl, you gotta stop all this.
I feel her here, I said. She's been here, I know it.
Maybe she was. I can't say. I just know some things are better left alone.
What do you mean? That I shouldn't find out what I can about my own mother?
What if...
She paused and rubbed the back of her neck.
What if you find out something you don't want to know?
What I heard her say was, "Your mother left you, Lily. Let it alone." I wanted to yell how stupid she was, but the words bunched in my throat. I started hiccuping instead. You think T-Ray was telling me the truth about her leaving me, don't you?
I don't have any idea about that, Rosaline said. I just don't want you getting yourself hurt.
I lay back on the bed. In the silence, my hiccups ricocheted around the room.
Hold your breath, pat your head, and rub your tummy, Rosaline said.
I ignored her. Eventually, I heard her breathing shift to a deeper place. I pulled on my shorts and sandals and crept to the desk where August filled honey orders. I tore a piece of paper from a tablet and wrote my mother's name on it. Deborah Owens. When I looked outside, I knew I would have to make my way by starlight. I crept across the grass, back to the edge of the woods, to May's wall, hiccuping all the way. Placing my hands on the stones, all I wanted was not to ache so much. I wanted to let go of my feelings for a little while, to pull in my moat bridge. I pressed the paper with her name into a cranny that seemed right for her, giving her to the wailing wall. Somewhere along the way, my hiccups disappeared. I sat on the ground with my back against the stones and my head tilted back so I could see the stars with all the spy satellites mixed in. Maybe one of them was taking my picture this very minute. They could spot me even in the dark. Nothing was safe. I would have to remember that. I started thinking maybe I should find out what I could about my mother before T-Ray or the police came for us. But where to start? I couldn't just pull out the Black Mary picture and show it to August without the truth wrecking everything, and she would decide, or might decide, would decide, I couldn't say, that she was obliged to call T-Ray to come get me. And if she knew that Rosaline was a true fugitive, wouldn't she have to call the police? The night seemed like an inkblot I had to figure out. I sat there and studied the darkness, trying to see through it to some sliver of light. The queen must produce some substance that attracts the workers and that can be obtained from her only by direct contact. This substance evidently stimulates the normal working behavior in the hive. This chemical messenger has been called queen substance. Experiments have shown that the bees obtain it directly from the body of the queen. Man and Insects. Chapter 6. The next morning, inside the honey house, I woke to banging in the yard. When I pulled myself off the cot and wandered outside, I found the tallest Negro man I'd ever seen working on the truck, bent over the motor, tools scattered around his feet. June handed him wrenches and what have you, cocking her head and beaming at him. In the kitchen, May and Rosaline were working on pancake batter. I didn't like pancakes that much, but I didn't say so. I was just thankful it wasn't grits. After kneeling on them half your life, you don't care to eat them. The trash can was full of banana peels, and the electric percolator bubbled into the tiny glass nozzle on top of it. Bloop, bloop. I loved the way it sounded, the way it smelled. "Who's the man out there?" I asked.
"That's Neil," said May. "He's sweet on June."
"It looks to me like June is sweet on him, too."
"Yeah, but she won't say so," said May. "She's kept that poor man strung along for years. Won't marry him and won't let him go."
May drizzled batter on the griddle in the shape of a big L.
"This one's yours," she said. "L for Lily."
Rosaline set the table and warmed the honey in a bowl of hot water. I poured orange juice into the jelly glasses. "How come June won't get married to him?" I asked.
"She was supposed to get married to somebody else a long time ago," said May. "But he didn't show up for the wedding."
I looked at Rosaline,
afraid this situation of jilted love might be unfortunate enough to send May into one of her episodes, but she was intent on my pancake. It struck me for the first time how odd it was that none of them were married. Three unmarried sisters living together like this. I heard Rosaline make a sound like, and I knew she was thinking about her own sorry husband, wishing he hadn't shown up for their ceremony. June swore off men and said she would never get married, and then she met Neil when he came to be the new principal at her school. I don't know what happened to his wife, but he didn't have one anymore after he moved here. He has tried every which way to get June to marry him, but she won't do it. Me and August can't convince her either. A wheeze welled up from May's chest, and then out came old Susanna. Here we go.
Lord, not again, said Rosaline.
I'm sorry, May said. I just can't help it.
Why don't you go out to the wall, I said, prying the spatula out of her hand. It's okay.
Yeah, Rosaline told her. You do what you gotta do.
We watched from the screen door as May cut past June and Neil. A few minutes later, June came in with Neil behind her. I worried that his head wouldn't clear the door.
What started May off?
June wanted to know. Her eyes followed a roach that darted beneath the refrigerator.
You didn't step on a roach in front of her, did you?
No, I said. We didn't even see a roach. She opened the cabinet under the sink and dug into the back for a pump can of bug killer. I thought about explaining to her my mother's ingenious method of ridding the house of roaches, cracker crumbs and marshmallow, but then I thought, this is June. Forget it.
Well, what upset her then?
June asked. I hated to come out and say it with Neil standing right there, but Rosaline didn't have any problem with it.
She's upset you won't marry Neil.
I had never considered until then that colored people could blush, or maybe it was anger that turned June's face and ears such a dark plum color. Neil laughed.
See there, you should marry me and quit upsetting your sister.
Oh, get out of here, she said, and gave him a push.
You promised me pancakes, and I'm gonna have them, he said.
He wore blue jeans and an undershirt with grease smears on it, along with horn-rimmed glasses. He looked like a very studious mechanic. He smiled at me and then Rosaline.
So are you gonna introduce me or keep me in the dark?
I have noticed that if you look carefully at people's eyes the first 5 seconds they look at you, the truth of their feelings will shine through for just an instant before it flickers away. June's eyes turned dull and hard when she looked at me.
This is Lily and Rosaline, she said. They're visiting for a while. Where do you come from?
He asked me. This is the number one most asked question in all of South Carolina. We want to know if you are one of us. If your cousin knows our cousin, if your little sister went to school with our big brother, if you go to the same Baptist church as our ex-boss, we are looking for ways our stories fit together. It was rare, though, for Negroes to ask white people where they're from, because there was nothing much to be gained from it as their stories weren't likely to link up. Spartanburg County? I said, having to pause and remember what I'd said earlier.
And you?
He said to Rosaline. She stared at the copper jello molds that hung on either side of the window over the sink.
Same place as Lily.
What's that burning? Said June. Smoke poured off the griddle. The L-shaped pancake had burned to a crisp. June yanked the spatula from my fingers, scraped up the mess, and dropped it into the trash.
How long are you planning on staying?
Neil asked. June stared at me, waiting. Her lips pinched tight along her teeth. A while longer, I answered, looking over into the garbage can. L for Lily. I could feel the questions gathering in him, knew I could not face them. I'm not hungry, I said, and walked out the back door. Crossing the back porch, I heard Rosaline say to him,
Have you registered yourself to vote?
On Sunday, I thought they would go to church,
But no, they held a special service in the pink house, and people came to them. It was a group called the Daughters of Mary, which August had organized. The Daughters of Mary started showing up in the parlor before 10 a.m. First was an old woman named Queenie and her grown daughter, Violet. They were dressed alike in bright yellow skirts and white blouses, though they wore different hats, at least. Next came Lunel, Mabel Lee, and Cressy, who wore the fanciest hats I'd ever laid eyes on. It turned out Lunel was a hat maker without the least bit of shyness. I'm talking about purple felt the size of a sombrero with fake fruit on the back. That was Lunel's. Mabel Lee wore a creation of tiger fur wrapped with gold fringe, but it was Cressy who carried the day in a crimson smokestack with black netting and ostrich feathers. If this was not enough, they wore clip-on ear bobs of various colored rhinestones and circles of rouge on their brown cheeks. I thought they were beautiful. In addition to all these daughters, it turned out Mary had one son besides Jesus, a man named Otis Hill, with stubby teeth, in an oversized navy suit. So technically the group was the daughters and son of Mary. He'd come with his wife, who was known to everyone as Sugar Girl. She wore a white dress, turquoise cotton gloves, and an emerald green turban on her head. August and June, hatless, gloveless, earbobless, looked practically poverty-stricken next to them. But May, good old May, had tied on a bright blue hat with the brim up on one side and down on the other. August had brought in chairs and arranged them in a semicircle facing the wooden statue of Mary. When we were all seated, she lit the candle and June played the cello. We said the Hail Marys together, Queenie and Violet moving strings of wooden beads through their fingers. August stood up and said she was glad me and Rosaline were with them. Then she opened a Bible and read, "And Mary said, Behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed. For he that is mighty hath done to me great things. He hath scattered the proud. He hath put down the mighty from their seats, and exalted them of low degree. He hath filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he hath sent empty away." Laying the Bible in her chair, she said, "It's been a while since we've told the story of Our Lady of Chains, and since we have visitors who've never heard the story of our statue, I thought we'd tell it again." One thing I was starting to understand was that August loved to tell a good story. "Really, it's good for all of us to hear it again," she said. "Stories have to be told or they die, and when they die, we can't remember who we are or why we're here." Cressy nodded, making the ostrich feathers wave through the air so you had the impression of a real bird in the room. "That's right, tell the story," she said. August pulled her chair close to the statue of Black Mary and sat facing us. When she began, it didn't sound like August talking at all, but like somebody talking through her, someone from another time and place. All the while, her eyes looked off toward the window, like she was seeing the drama play out in the sky.
"Well," she said, "back in the time of slaves, when the people were beaten down and kept like property, they prayed every day and every night for deliverance. On the islands near Charleston, they would go to the praise house and sing and pray, and every single time someone would ask the Lord to send them rescue, to send them consolation, to send them freedom."
I could tell she had repeated those opening lines 1,000 times, that she was saying them the exact way she'd heard them coming from the lips of some old woman who'd heard them from the lips of an even older one, the way they came out like a song, with rhythms that rocked us to and fro till we had left the premises and were ourselves on the islands of Charleston looking for rescue.
"One day," August said, "a slave named Obadiah was loading bricks onto a boat that would sail down the Ashley River when he saw something washed up on the bank. Coming closer, he saw it was the wooden figure of a woman, Her body was growing out of a block of wood, a black woman with her arm lifted out and her fist balled up. At this point, August stood up and struck the pose herself. She looked just like the statue standing there, her right arm raised and her hand clutched into a fist. She stayed like that for a few seconds while we sat, spellbound. Obadiah pulled the figure out of the water, she went on, and struggled to set her upright. Then he remembered how they'd asked the Lord to send them rescue, to send them consolation, to send them freedom. Obadiah knew the Lord had sent this figure, but he didn't know who she was. He knelt down in the marsh mud before her and heard her voice speak plain as day in his heart. She said, It's all right. I'm here. I'll be taking care of you now. This story was 10 times better than Beatrix the Nun. August glided back and forth across the room as she spoke. Obadiah tried to pick up the waterlogged woman who God had sent to take care of them, but she was too heavy. So he went and got 2 more slaves, and between them they carried her to the praise house and set her on the hearth. By the time the next Sunday came, everyone had heard about the statue washing up from the river, how it had spoken to Obadiah. The praise house was filled with people spilling out the door and sitting on the window ledges. Obadiah told them he knew the Lord God had sent her, but he didn't know who she was. He didn't know who she was, cried Sugar Girl, breaking into the story. Then all the daughters of Mary broke loose, saying over and over, Not one of them knew. I looked over at Rosaline, who I hardly recognized for the way she leaned forward in her chair, chanting along with them. When everything had quieted down, August said, Now, the oldest of the slaves was a woman named Pearl. She walked with a stick, and when she spoke, everyone listened. She got to her feet and said, This here is the mother of Jesus. Everyone knew the mother of Jesus was named Mary, and that she'd seen suffering of every kind, that she was strong and constant and had a mother's heart. And here she was, sent to them on the same waters that had brought them here in chains. It seemed to them she knew everything they suffered. I stared at the statue, feeling the fractured place in my heart. And so, August said, the people cried and danced and clapped their hands. They went one at a time and touched their hands to her chest, wanting to grab on to the solace in her heart. They did this every Sunday in the praise house, dancing and touching her chest, and eventually they painted a red heart on her breast so the people would have a heart to touch. Our Lady filled their hearts with fearlessness and whispered to them plans of escape. The bold ones fled, finding their way north, and those who didn't live with a raised fist in their hearts, and if ever it grew weak, they would only have to touch her heart again. She grew so powerful, she became known even to the master. One day he hauled her off on a wagon and chained her in the carriage house. But then, without any human help, she escaped during the night and made her way back to the praise house. The master chained her in the barn 50 times, and 50 times she loosed the chains and went home. Finally, he gave up and let her stay there. The room grew quiet as August stood there a minute, letting everything sink in. When she spoke again, she raised her arms out beside her. The people called her Our Lady of Chains. They called her that not because she wore chains, not because she wore chains, the daughters chanted. They called her Our Lady of Chains because she broke them. June wedged the cello between her legs and played Amazing Grace, and the daughters of Mary got to their feet and swayed together like colorful seaweed on the ocean floor. I thought this was the grand finale, but no,
June switched over to the piano and banged out a jazzed-up version of Go Tell It on the Mountain. That's when August started a conga line. She danced over to Lunel, who latched onto August's waist. Cressy hooked on to Lunel, followed by Mabel Lee, and off they went around the room, causing Cressy to grab hold of her crimson hat. When they swung back by, Queenie and Violet joined them, then Sugar Girl. I wanted to be part of it, too, but I only watched, and so did Rosaline and Otis. June seemed to play faster and faster. I fanned my face trying to get a little air, feeling lightheaded. When the dance ended, the daughters stood panting in a half circle before Our Lady of Chains, and what they did next took my breath away. One at a time, they went and touched the statue's fading red heart. Queenie and her daughter went together and rubbed their palms against the wood. Lunel pressed her fingers to Mary's heart, then kissed each one of them in a slow, deliberate way, a way that brought tears to my eyes. Otis pressed his forehead to the heart, standing there the longest time of them all, head to heart, like he was filling up his empty tank. June kept playing while each of them came, until there was only Rosaline and me left. May nodded to June to keep on with the music and took Rosaline's hand, pulling her to Our Lady of Chains, so even Rosaline got to touch Mary's heart. I wanted to touch her vanishing red heart, too, as much as anything I'd ever wanted. As I rose from my chair, my head was still swimming some. I walked toward Black Mary with my hand lifted. But just as I was about to reach her, June stopped playing. She stopped right in the middle of the song, and I was left in the silence with my hand stretched out. Drawing it back, I looked around me and it was like seeing everything through a train's thick window. A blur passed before me, a moving wave of color. I'm not one of you, I thought. My body felt numb. I thought how nice it would be to grow smaller and smaller until I was a dot of nothing. I heard August scolding, June, what got into you? But her voice was so distant. I called to the Lady of Chains, but maybe I wasn't really saying her name out loud, only hearing myself call on the inside. That's the last I remember, her name echoing through the empty spaces. When I woke, I was lying on August's bed across the hall with an ice-cold washcloth folded over my forehead and August and Rosaline staring down at me. Rosaline had pulled up the skirt of her dress and was fanning me with it, showing most of her thighs.
Since when have you started fainting? She said, and sat down on the edge of the bed, causing me to roll into her side.
She scooped me into her arms. For some reason, this caused my chest to fill with more sadness than I could bear, and I wrestled myself free, claiming I needed a drink of water.
Maybe it was the heat, August said. I should have turned on the fans. It must have been 90 degrees in there.
I'm all right, I told them. But to tell the truth, I was bewildered at myself. I felt I'd stumbled upon an amazing secret. It was possible to close your eyes and exit life without actually dying. You just had to faint. Only I didn't know how to make it happen, how to pull the plug so I could drain away when I needed to. My fainting spell had broken up the Daughters of Mary and sent May to the Wailing Wall. June had gone upstairs to her room and locked the door while the daughters huddled in the kitchen. We chalked it up to heat. Heat, we said. Heat would make a person do strange things. You should have seen how August and Rosaline fussed over me the rest of the evening. You want some root beer, Lily? How about a feather pillow? Here, swallow this spoon of honey. We sat in the den, where I ate supper off a tray, which was a privilege in itself. June was still in her room, not answering August's calls at the door, and May, who wasn't allowed near the TV because she'd already spent way too much time today at the wall, was in the kitchen clipping recipes from McCall's magazine. On the television, Mr. Cronkite said they were going to send a rocket ship to the moon.
On July 28th, the United States of America will launch Ranger 7 from Cape Kennedy, Florida, he said.
It was going to take a 253,665-mile flight before it crash-landed onto the moon. The whole point was to take pictures of the surface and send them back.
Well, baby Jesus, said Rosaline, a rocket to the moon.
August shook her head. Next they'll be walking around up there. We had all thought President Kennedy was off his rocker when he declared we'd land a man on the moon. The Silva newspaper had called it a lunatic vision. I took the article to class for the current events bulletin board. We all said, a man on the moon, right. But you can never underestimate the power of cutthroat competition. We wanted to beat the Russians. That was what made the world go round for us. Now it looked like we would. August cut off the TV set.
I need some air.
We all went, Rosaline and August holding on to my elbows in case I started to keel over again. It was the in-between time, before day leaves and night comes, a time I've never been partial to because of the sadness that lingers in the space between going and coming. August gazed at the sky where the moon was rising, large and ghostly silver.
Look at her good, Lily, she said, 'cause you're seeing the end of something.
I am?
Yes, you are, because as long as people have been on this earth, the moon has been a mystery to us. Think about it. She is strong enough to pull the oceans, and when she dies away, she always comes back again. My mama used to tell me Our Lady lived on the moon, and that I should dance when her face was bright, and hibernate when it was dark.
August stared at the sky a long moment, and then turning toward the house said,
Now it won't ever be the same, not after they've landed up there and walked around on her. She'll be just one more big science project.
I thought about the dream I'd had that night Rosaline and I slept by the pond, how the moon had cracked to pieces. August disappeared into the house, and Rosaline headed for her cot in the honey house, but I stayed on and stared at the sky, imagining Ranger 7 blasting away for it. I knew one day I would go back into the parlor when no one was around and touch the lady's heart. Then I would show August the picture of my mother and see if the moon broke loose and fell out of the sky. How did bees ever become equated with sex? They do not live a riotous sex life themselves. A hive suggests cloister more than bordello. The Queen Must Die and Other Affairs of Bees and Men. Chapter 7. I jumped every time I heard a siren. It might have been an ambulance off in the distance or a police chase on television. It didn't matter. Part of me was always braced for T-Ray or Mr. Shoe Gaston to drive up and end my charmed life. We had been at August's house 8 whole days. I didn't know how long Black Mary could keep the curtain drawn. On Monday morning, July 13th, I was walking back to the honey house after breakfast when I noticed a strange black Ford parked in the driveway. I lost my breath for a moment, till I remembered Zack was coming back to work today. It would be me and August and Zack. I'm not proud of it, but I resented the intrusion. He was not what I expected. I found him inside holding a honey drizzle like a microphone, singing, I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill. I watched unseen from the doorway, not making a sound, but when he launched into Viva Las Vegas, slinging his hips around Elvis style, I broke out laughing. He whirled around, knocking over a tray of brood frames, which made a great big mess all over the floor.
I was just singing, he said, like this was news to me. Who are you, anyway?
Lily, I said. I'm staying with August and them for a while. I'm Zachary Taylor, he said. Zachary Taylor was a president, I told him.
Yeah, so I've heard.
He fished out a dog tag suspended on a chain under his shirt and held it up to my nose. See right there? Zachary Lincoln Taylor. He smiled then, and I saw he had a one-side dimple. It's a feature that has always gotten to me. He went and got a towel and cleaned up the floor.
August told me about you being here and helping us out, but she didn't say anything about you being...
white.
Yep, I'm white all right, I said. White as can be. There was nothing white about Zachary Lincoln Taylor. Even the whites of his eyes weren't exactly white. He had broad shoulders and a narrow waist and short-cropped hair like most of the Negro boys wore. But it was his face I couldn't help staring at. If he was shocked over me being white, I was shocked over him being handsome. At my school, they made fun of colored people's lips and noses. I myself had laughed at these jokes, hoping to fit in. Now I wished I could pen a letter to my school to be read at opening assembly that would tell them how wrong we'd all been. You should see Zachary Taylor, I'd say. I wondered how August could forget to tell him a thing like the fact that I was white. She'd told me plenty about him. I knew she was his godmother, that his daddy had left him when he was small, that his mama worked as a lunchroom lady at the same school where June taught. He was about to be a junior at the black high school, where he made all A's and played halfback on the football team. She'd said he ran like the wind, which might be his ticket to a college up north. This had struck me as better than I would manage, since I was probably headed for beauty school now. I said, August went out to the Satterfield farm to check on some hives. She said I should help you in here. What do you want me to do?
Grab some frames from the hive boxes over there and help me load the uncapper, I guess.
So who do you like best, Fats Domino or Elvis? I asked, dropping in the first frame.
Miles Davis, he said.
I don't know who that is.
Of course you don't, but he's the best trumpet player in the world. I'd give anything to play like him.
Would you give up football?
How do you know I play football?
I know things, I said, and smiled at him.
I can see that. He was trying not to smile back.
I thought, we're gonna be friends. He flipped the switch, and the extractor started to spin, building speed.
So how come you're staying here?
Me and Rosalina are on our way to Virginia to live with my aunt. My daddy died in a tractor accident, and I haven't had a mother since I was little, so I'm trying to get to my family up there before I get put in an orphanage or something.
But how come you're here?
Oh, you mean at August's. We were hitchhiking and got let out at Tiburon. We knocked on August's door and she gave us a bed, that's it. He nodded like this made some kind of actual sense. How long have you worked here? I asked, happy to change the subject.
All through high school. I come after school when it's not football season, every Saturday and all summer. I bought a car with the money I made last year.
That Ford out there?
Yeah, it's a 59 Ford Fairlane, he said.
He flipped the switch on the extractor again, and the machine groaned while it came to a stop.
Come on, I'll show you.
I could see my face in the surface of it. I figured he stayed up nights polishing it with his undershirts. I walked along, giving it the white glove inspection.
You can teach me to drive, I said.
Not in this car.
Why not?
Because you look like the kind of girl who wrecks something for sure.
I turned to face him, ready to defend myself, and saw he was grinning. And there was the one-side dimple again.
For sure, he said. Wreck something for sure.
Every day, Zach and I worked in the honey house. August and Zach had already extracted most of the honey from her bee yards, but there were still several stacks of supers on pallets sitting around. We ran the warmer and caught the wax in a tin tub, then loaded the frames into the extractor and filtered the honey through brand new nylon hose. August liked to keep a little pollen in her honey because it was good for people, so we saw to that, too. Sometimes we broke off pieces of comb and pushed them down into the jars before we filled them. You had to make sure they were new combs, with no brood eggs in them, since nobody wanted to have baby bee larvae in their honey. And if we weren't doing all that, we were filling candle molds with beeswax and washing mason jars till my hands turned stiff as corn husk from detergent. The only part of the day I dreaded was dinner, when I had to be around June. You'd think anybody who played music for dying people would be a nicer person. I couldn't understand why she resented me so much. Somehow even me being white and imposing on their hospitality didn't seem enough reason.
How are things coming with you, Lily?
She'd say every night at the table, like she'd rehearsed this in the mirror. I'd say, things are coming fine, and how are they coming with you, June? She would glance at August, who would be following all this like she was overcome with interest. Fine, June would say. Having gotten that out of the way, we would shake out our napkins and do our best to ignore each other the rest of the meal. I knew that August was trying to correct June's rudeness toward me, but I wanted to say to her, do you think me and June Boatwright give a damn how each other is coming? Just give up. One night after the Hail Marys, August said, Lily, if you wish to touch our lady's heart, you're welcome. Isn't she, June? I glanced at June, who gave me a forced smile. Maybe some other time, I said. I'm here to tell you, if I was dying on my cot in the honey house, and the only thing that could save me was June's change of heart, I would meet my death and shoot straight to heaven. Or maybe hell, I wasn't even sure anymore. The best meal was lunch, which Zack and I ate under the cool of the pine trees. May fixed us bologna sandwiches nearly every single day. We could also count on candlestick salad, which meant half a banana standing up in a pineapple slice. Let me light your candle, she'd say, and strike an imaginary match. Then she'd fasten a bottled cherry on the tip of the banana with the toothpick. Like Zack and I were still in kindergarten. But we'd go along with her, acting all excited over her lighting the banana. For dessert, we crunched cubes of lime Kool-Aid, which she'd frozen in ice trays. One day we sat on the grass after lunch, listening to the wind snap the sheets Rosaline had hung on the clothesline. What's your favorite subject in school? Zack asked. English. I bet you like to write themes, he said, rolling his eyes. As a matter of fact, I do. I was planning on being a writer and an English teacher in my spare time. Was planning? He said. I don't think I have much of a future now, being an orphan. What I meant was being a fugitive from the law. Considering the state of things, I didn't know if I'd even get back to high school. He studied his fingers. I could smell the sharp scent of his sweat. He had patches of honey on his shirt, which were attracting a horde of flies and causing him to swat incessantly. After a while, he said, Me either. You either what? I don't know if I'll have much of a future either. Why not? You're not an orphan. No, he said. I'm a Negro. I felt embarrassed. Well, you could play football for a college team and then be a professional player. Why is it sports is the only thing white people see us being successful at? I don't want to play football, he said. I want to be a lawyer. That's fine with me, I said, a little annoyed. I've just never heard of a Negro lawyer, that's all. You've got to hear of these things before you can imagine them. Bullshit. You gotta imagine what's never been. I closed my eyes. All right, then. I'm imagining a Negro lawyer. You are a Negro Perry Mason. People are coming to you from all over the state. Wrong accused people. And you get at the truth at the very last minute by tricking the real criminal on the witness stand. Yeah, he said. I'll bust their ass with the truth. When he laughed, his tongue was grass green from Kool-Aid. I started calling him Zack the Ass-Busting Lawyer. Oh, look who's here, Zack the Ass-Busting Lawyer, I'd say. It was long about this point Rosaline started asking me what did I think I was doing, auditioning myself to get adopted by the Calendar Sisters. She said I was living in a dream world. Dream world became her favorite two words. It was living in a dream world to pretend we had a regular life when there was a manhunt going on, to think we could stay here forever, to believe I would find out anything worth knowing about my mother.
Every time I shot back, "What's wrong with living in a dream world?" And she'd say, "You have to wake up." One afternoon when I was alone in the honey house, June wandered in looking for August, or so she said. She crossed her arms over her chest.
"So," she said, "you've been here, what, 2 weeks now?"
"How obvious can you get?" "Look, if you want us to leave, me and Rosaline will be on our way," I said. "I'll write my aunt and she'll send us bus money." She raised her eyebrows.
"I thought you didn't remember your aunt's last name, and now you know her name and address?"
"Actually, I knew it all along," I said. "I was just hoping for a little time before we had to leave." It seemed like her face softened some when I said that, but it could have been wishful thinking on my part.
"Heavens to Betsy, what's this talk about you leaving?"
said August, standing in the doorway. Neither one of us had seen her come in. She gave June a hard look.
"Nobody wants you to leave, Lily, till you're good and ready."
Standing beside August's desk, I fidgeted with a stack of papers. June cleared her throat.
"Well, I need to get back in practice," she said, and breezed out the door.
August walked over and sat down in her desk chair.
"Lily, you can talk to me. You know that, don't you?"
When I didn't answer, she caught my hand and drew me to her, pulling me right down onto her lap. It was not mattress deep like Rosaline's, but thin and angular. I wanted nothing more than to come clean with her, go pull my bag from underneath the cot and bring out my mother's things. I wanted to produce the Black Mary picture and say, "This belonged to my mother, this exact same identical picture you put on your honey jars. And it has Tiburon, South Carolina written on the back, so I know she must have been here." I wanted to hold up her photograph and say, "Have you ever seen her? Take your time now. Think carefully." But I hadn't yet pressed my hand to the Black Mary's heart in the parlor, and I was too afraid to say all this without having done at least that. I leaned against August's chest, pushing aside my secret wanting, too afraid she'd say, "No. I never saw this woman in my life." And that would be that. Not knowing anything at all was better. I struggled to my feet. "I guess I'll go help in the kitchen." I crossed the yard without a glance back. That night, when the darkness was weighed down with the singing crickets and Rosaline was snoring right along with them, I had myself a good cry. I couldn't even say why. Just everything, I guess. Because I hated lying to August when she was so good to me. Because Rosaline was probably right about dream worlds. Because I was pretty sure the Virgin Mary was not back there on the peach farm standing in for me the way she'd stood in for Beatrix. Neil came over most evenings and sat with June in the parlor while the rest of us watched The Fugitive on television in the den. August said she wished The Fugitive would go ahead and find the one-armed man and get it over with. During commercials, I pretended to go for water and instead crept down the hall, where I tried to make out what June and Neil were saying.
"I'd like you to tell me why not," I heard Neil say one evening.
And June,
"Because I can't. That's not a reason."
"Well, it's the only one I've got."
"Look, I'm not gonna wait around forever," Neil said.
I was anticipating what June would say to that, when Neil came through the door without warning and caught me pressed against the wall listening to their most private sayings. He looked for a second like he might turn me over to June, but he left, banging the front door behind him. I hightailed it back to the den, but not before I heard the beginnings of a sob in June's throat. One morning, August sent Zack and me 6 miles out in the county to bring in the last of the supers to be harvested. Lord, it was hot. Plus we had at least 10 gnats per square inch of air. Zack drove the honey wagon as fast as it would go, which was about 30 miles an hour. The wind whipped my hair and flooded the truck with a weedy, new-mown smell. The roadsides were covered with fresh-picked cotton, blown from the trucks carrying it to the gin in Tiburon. Zack said the farmers had planted and harvested their cotton early this year because of the boll weevil.
Scattered along the highway, it looked for all the world like snow, which made me wish for a blizzard to come cool things down. I went off into a daydream about Zack pulling the truck over because he couldn't see to drive for the snow, and us having a snowball fight, blasting each other with soft white snow cotton. I imagined us building a snow cave, sleeping with our bodies twined together to get warm, our arms and legs like black and white braids. This last thought shocked my system so bad I shivered. I sucked my hands under my arms, and my sweat was ice water cold.
You all right? Asked Zack.
Yeah, why?
You're shaking over there.
I'm fine. I do that sometimes. I turned away and looked out the window, where there was nothing but fields, and now and then a falling down wooden barn or some old abandoned colored house. How much further? I said in a way that suggested the excursion could not be over too soon.
You upset or something?
I refused to answer him, glaring instead through the dirty windshield. When we turned off the highway onto a beat-up dirt road, Zack said we were on property belonging to Mr. Clayton Forrest, who kept Black Madonna honey and beeswax candles in the waiting room of his law office so his customers could buy them. Part of Zack's job was going around to deliver fresh supplies of honey and candles to places that sold them on consignment.
Mr. Forrest lets me poke around his law office, he said.
Uh-huh.
He tells me about the cases he's won.
We hit a rut and bounced on the seat so hard our heads rammed into the truck roof, which for some reason flipped my mood upside down. I started to laugh like somebody was holding me down, tickling my armpits. The more my head slammed against the truck, the worse it got till I was having one big hilarious seizure. I laughed the way May cried. At first, Zack aimed for the ruts just to hear me, but then he got nervous because I couldn't seem to stop. He cleared his throat and slowed way down till we were bounce free. Finally, it drained out of me, whatever it was. I remembered the pleasure of fainting that day during the Daughters of Mary meeting and thought now how much I would like to keel over right here in the truck. I envied turtles their shells, how they could disappear at will. I was conscious of Zack's breathing, his shirt pulled across his chest, one arm draped on the steering wheel, the hard, dark look of it, the mystery of his skin. It was foolish to think some things were beyond happening. Even being attracted to Negroes, I'd honestly thought such a thing couldn't happen, the way water could not run uphill, or salt could not taste sweet. A law of nature. Maybe it was a simple matter of being attracted to what I couldn't have. Or maybe desire kicked in when it pleased without noticing the rules we lived and died by.
You gotta imagine what's never been, Zack had said.
He stopped the honey wagon beside a cluster of 20 hives tucked in a thicket of trees, where the bees could have shade in the summer and shelter from the wind through the winter. Bees were more fragile than I ever imagined. If it wasn't mites ruining them, it was pesticides or terrible weather. He climbed out and dragged a load of equipment off the back of the truck. Helmets, extra supers, fresh brood frames, and the smoker, which he handed me to light. I moved through camphorweed and wild azalea, stepping over fire ant mounds and swinging the smoker while he lifted the lids off the hives and peered inside looking for capped frames. He moved like a person with a genuine love of bees. I could not believe how gentle and soft-hearted he could be. One of the frames he lifted out leaked honey the color of plums. "It's purple," I said.
"When the weather turns hot and the flowers dry up, the bees start sucking elderberry. It makes a purple honey. People will pay $2 a jar for purple honey."
He dipped his finger into the comb, and lifting my veil, brought it close to my lips. I opened my mouth, let his finger slide in, sucking it clean. The sheerest smile brushed his lips, and heat rushed up my body. He bent toward me. I wanted him to lift back my veil and kiss me, and I knew he wanted to do it, too, by the way he fixed his eyes on mine. We stayed like that while bees swirled around our heads with a sound like sizzling bacon. a sound that no longer registered as danger. Danger, I realized, was a thing you got used to. But instead of kissing me, he turned to the next hive and went right on with his work.